Welcome to the WHFR Journal. I'm Susan McGraw. Happy summer season, and I hope you are staying cool, enjoying a little bit of time away from the workplace, and just embracing what we know here in the Metro Detroit area as one of the best seasons to get outside and do something fun. And today's interview is speaking to that topic regarding a just truly a staple in this Detroit community. We call it Concert of Colors, Sea of C, Concert of Colors here in the Detroit area. And it's something that, every year we look forward to this beautiful event. It's a musical experience, and as they actually call it, an immersive musical experience. Love that phrase. And so no stranger to WHFR radio, and hopefully a familiar face at Concert of Colors for you if you've attended in the past. We're joined on our live line today with Ralph Valdez. He is the Concert of Colors Deputy Director, and we want to immerse our listeners in what they can expect for this event. It really is something we look forward to at WHFR every single year. The 33rd annual Diversity Festival this year, as I understand it, starting on the 16th of July, going through the 21st. Ralph, welcome back, and congratulations on what is, I know, going to be another wonderful Concert of Colors.
Thank you, Susan, and hello to all of our WHFR friends near and far and wide. It's always a pleasure to speak to you, and we really appreciate the support that WHFR gives to the Concert of Colors every year. You guys broadcast live and you help to promote it in so many ways. We are in our 33rd year of the Concert of Colors. It is free, and it is, I believe, still like the only free world music festival of its size, and especially in the United States, I'm sure it is. There are a few other great ones around, but Concert of Colors I take particular pride in because of the caliber of the artists that come from all over the world, all over the country, and all over from Detroit and Dearborn as well.
And there really is something for everyone, Ralph. And as you indicated, free, certainly family-friendly opportunities for a variety of listening venues inside and outside, indoors and outdoors. And I know the venue that has been for a little bit now, the Detroit Institute of Arts area, and then some surrounding different cultural institutions here in the Detroit area really make for some opportunities to see something different and unique. You're not just going to the same concert hall like you're used to, perhaps, and just, you know, sitting there and watching people come to you. We're actually going to experience not just the music, but also the variety of the creativity and the art and the acoustics of a variety of different venues. And for me, I'll be honest, there's nothing better in the summer than live outdoor concerts. And we've got plenty of that this year, too. So tell us a little bit about who you gear this event four, just to start, and then we'll get into some of the very specifics of days and times and who we're going to see perform.
Yeah, there's a lot to go over, of course. The folks that we are appealing to are really everyone, just young and old and all walks of life. And that's one of the things that always astounds me and impresses me about the Concert of Colors through all the many years that I've been involved with it, is that you see so many different people coming together. It's inter-everything, interracial, intergenerational, the types of people that you see getting together and dancing and celebrating each other's culture or discovering new ideas about other cultures is just really what it's all about and what it's always been about through our early days and with the co-founder of the festival, Ismail Ahmed, who helped co-found Access and the Arab American National Museum. His vision has always been to bring people together, knowing that he's a big music lover, and he's always felt like learning about other people's music has really helped to build bridges instead of walls and to bring people together. And as you say, there are opportunities for multiple stages, indoors and outdoors. We have the North Lawn stage. Our home base, once again, is the Detroit Institute of Arts. So we are in Midtown with many partners, many wonderful partners like WHFR, as I mentioned, broadcasting live from outdoors. But we also have the Detroit Historical Museum, the Michigan Science Center, the Hellenic Museum, the Scarab Club, the Charles H. Wright Museum of African American History, the U of M Detroit Center, U of M Detroit Center, which is a big partner who activate the South Lawn stage of the DIA with what they call the Wolverine stage. And they are just always doing a bang-up job bringing in music from all over the city. So there's a particular emphasis on a variety of different types of music from Detroit, from hip-hop to blues to rock to jazz. They cover it all. But the festival in general, as you've mentioned, does cover it all as well, with music coming from all over the world and all over the country, all over the city, all over the state. And it is July 16th through the 21st, and it's free.
I think one of the most interesting things, being a participant, again, we do a live broadcasting from the Wolverine stage, in fact, for our listeners that are hopefully on their way to the concert or had to leave early and are on their way back, but also from those around the world broadcasting on the internet at WHFR.FM. But one of the things that's most interesting and appealing to me is seeing, I've never been to an event, a concert event especially, where I see the youngest of young children dancing on the same, you know, the same lawn or in the same area with the, let's say, our seniors as well. And then everybody in between, of course, but that range is just amazing. And again, every color, every culture, and the outfits, the clothing that even the guests wear are spectacular. You know, go come and dress up and have some fun. But I see, you know, 2-year-olds, and I've seen like moms with babies strapped to their bellies dancing. And then I see like a 90-year-old lady kicking it out as well. And that is just, to me, that means, oh my gosh, something is being done very, very right here. So very cool.
That's exactly what I've been saying, Susan, is for many years. That's what makes my heart smile when I go to the Concert of Colors. And you really do feel these tensions in the world, especially today, kind of melt away when you see so many diverse types of people just enjoying life, enjoying dancing, enjoying the food, enjoying the music, enjoying each other, the company that they each bring, and the joy that you feel. So that is definitely a major component of the Concert of Colors that cannot be overstated.
Well, thank you, Ralph. I'm looking at the poster that's online at concertofcolors.com, of course, and they're always beautiful. They really are collectible in and of themselves, but this 33rd annual one is just gorgeous, and peace, love, and understanding is what it says right at the top, along with a beautiful font and designs and things. But there are so many names on this list, some that I recognize, some that I don't. And I'll also say thankfully, because one of the best parts is the opportunity to experience new music, you know, to be introduced to artists that are brand new, and maybe they become favorites and we support them and keep them in our lives. Once the event is over, we can still, you know, appreciate the music. And that's what's so wonderful about this. But when we talk about the concept of like, I don't know, headliner, is there such a thing? I know the Don Was event typically is the big one, that the biggest one, I'll say, that most people are familiar with. But how does that process work in terms of the lesser known, perhaps, or at least less in terms of experience of performing here in this part of the country versus the ones that everybody, you know, Tito Puente, I see. Well, everybody's going to know the music of Tito Puente, right? Or the music of, you know, some of these other artists. But what's that process like? It's got to be very exciting.
It is. It's very exciting. The majority of the curation of the festival is done by Ishmael Ahmed, our founder of Concert of Colors, who's still way more involved, I think, than he wants to be. You know, he's just always, this is a passion project, a labor of love for him through 33 years. But he's been instrumental in bringing the music and helping to research who's touring, who's available, kind of helping to have some of our partners bring in different people. But the process itself, I think, begins with he and Don Was have become pretty much like the heart and soul of the festival. They start by coming up with the Don Was All-Star Review each year, which is an emphasis on usually something Detroit-based or something definitely with Detroit-based artists. And they were talking about having a different theme this year, but the way the world just started to really take a negative turn this year got Don thinking that he really felt like the theme for the All-Star Review this year needed to be peace, love, and understanding, and that the world needs more of that and needed it more than ever. So what they've done is gathered a bunch of great Detroit artists, some that most folks might recognize, folks like Marshall Crenshaw and Mike E., the Corktown Popes, Carolyn Strio, but they've also invited people like Gretchen Gonzalez-Davidson and Stephanie Christian and a few others to interpret songs of peace, love, and understanding. So I made some suggestions of some songs. I don't know which ones they've ended up going with, but it'll be fun to see the Don Was Detroit All-Star Review, which will be indoors at the Detroit Film Theater of the Detroit Institute of Arts. And that's a big, big annual event that's always looked forward to. And it's taking place on Sunday, July 21st. So be sure to get there early for that because it is free. And it is going to be fun to see what songs were chosen for these great Detroit artists and Don Was's wonderful band. He and Ann DeLisi work closely together as well as with Ishmael. And they have a real finger on the pulse of Detroit music, obviously. So they know, you know, which people to invite and to get on board. So that's one thing that I know a lot of folks are looking to that might be considered a headline event. Of course, you mentioned Tito Puente, the music of Tito Puente, the music of Machito, and the music of Tito Rodriguez is all part of the Big Palladium 3, which is an orchestra that's doing Latin salsa and energetic dance music that's going to be a big part of the Concert of Colors this year. We'll go over more specifically like where some of these folks are playing, but I don't want to overwhelm people too much right off the bat, but I will mention another group from England that we're looking forward to, a sort of a headliner called Trans Global Underground, which we've been trying to get for many, many years to the Concert of Colors. So we are excited to have Trans Global Underground partake in the festivities this year.
Fantastic. Let's remind our listeners here on this edition of the WHFR Journal, we're talking with Ralph Valdez, again, a familiar voice and certainly someone that is in the know when it comes to so many things in the Detroit area, but especially Concert of Colors. He is this year's Concert of Colors Deputy Director and has been doing this for many, many years, and it just pays off, I'll tell you. Just when you think, wow, the lineup can't get better, next year can't get better. It kind of does. It's pretty incredible. We know that it's both a labor of love, a passion, but a vocation for the sake of bettering our community and making this world a better place. As you indicated, peace, love, and understanding. Individually, those are important things, but when we put them together, they just sort of go to a higher level, don't they? Makes even more sense, especially these days. And on this edition of the Journal, we hope to not only reacquaint you to Concert of Colors, if it's been a while since you've participated, maybe you're a regular and you're like, oh, I've done that, I know that, I can't wait to go back. Maybe you're hearing about this wonderful diversity festival, this free live event for the first time. And if you fall into that category, keep an open mind and do please consider making some time available for this very, very profound event. And it is right around the corner. So starting on the 16th of July, starting on Tuesday, there are activities and events.
Art shows and workshops and lectures. There's of course, music being the main focus, but there's always I'm always glad to see an expansion of other things happening with the Concert of Colors. So we'll talk about some of those things happening as well. But I did want to remind our friends listening that the place to go for the schedules and the website and more information is concertofcolors.com. You can find everything there. The information, even little videos of some of the bands, and it's a fun way to kind of help digest all this wonderful information.
Great. Thank you. Thank you for saying that, Ralph. And also, I appreciate you mentioning about some of the variety, that's going to be there besides beyond the music. And we know that's fun for kids. That's, again, back to that sort of family-friendly opportunity to really make several days out of this. To me, it's not just I'm going to come on Friday or I'm going to come on Sunday.
Yeah.
You kind of want to come to most
Everything.
or all of this. Yeah, that's the thing. Sometimes, you have to pick and choose a bit, but yeah, that's a component that we definitely want to keep in mind. Things like arts and scraps and so on, which are truly popular and so much fun. So let's get into it a bit, Ralph. And again, as you mentioned, concertofcolors.com. If anyone would like to find very specific components of what is where and when, so we don't expect you to necessarily have to read the whole schedule, but just to show again that variety and that diversity of locations and opportunities for our community to get involved and just celebrate diversity, which is truly what this is all about. So where would you like to start?
First of all, everything is walking friendly, walking distance from everything else. So there are many different stages and venues in the Midtown area based, as I said, with the Detroit Institute of Arts as our home base there on Woodward. And they have activated a North Lawn stage as well as a South Lawn stage where the U of M Detroit Center Friends will be using it as the Wolverine stage. So we'll talk about some of the performers that they have scheduled for that. But if we start on the 16th of July, which is Tuesday, Third Man Records, right in the neighborhood on Canfield, is going to be presenting Ian Fink and Friends. And Ian is a young pianist and composer who has just been knocking people's socks off with his music. It's so mature and so creative and just so many different things happening in this music that's sort of jazz and funk and soul based, but goes in many other different directions. So that's something people are going to be looking forward to kick off the Concert of Colors at Third Man Records on Tuesday, July 16th. We also have on Wednesday, July 17th, the next day at the Scarab Club, which is right behind the Detroit Institute of Arts. We have Silver Chord, which is a new interesting project of Gretchen Davidson and some other world musicians performing. Now, Gretchen has another new band that's been getting a lot of attention called Infinite River. This is even newer than that. So Silver Chord will be performing at the Scarab Club on Wednesday, July 17th, behind the DIA at 8 p.m. with WDET's own DJ Liz Warner, who used to be known as Liz Copeland, and she's back and she's going to be doing a DJ set there as well. And yeah, you mentioned arts and scraps, which is always so much fun for the families and for kids. It's recycled art and they have little demonstrations and hands-on activities for children. That's going to be at the Michigan Science Center on Thursday, July 18th, starting at noon. So the Michigan Science Center right there in the Midtown area, Cultural Center. And I'll mention, if I may, just a couple of other things that are happening on Thursday, and we'll maybe go deeper into the weekend. But Thursday is a busy day for the Concert of Colors. So Thursday, July 18th, the Michigan Science Center kicks off with Arts and Scraps. Then we have an organization called New Music Detroit performing outdoors at the Detroit Symphony Orchestra Hall at their Sosnick Courtyard at 6 p.m. So that's New Music Detroit. And then the Arab American National Museum will have a forum on community, culture, and race, which we look forward to every year. This year's theme is called Until Everybody's Free, Artists for Liberation. And there'll be panelists and performances at the Arab American National Museum on Michigan Avenue there in Dearborn. And that starts at 6 and goes till 8:30, Thursday, July 18th. And then Spotlight Detroit is a wonderful club that in Detroit that's happening Thursday, July 18th with Nafada, an audio uprising documentary film and performance with female musicians from North Africa and beyond and others. And then there'll be live music at 10 from these wonderful people from North Africa and around the world at Spotlight Detroit. So once again, those are the first few days of the Concert of Colors schedule, which, as Susan mentioned, you can go to concertofcolors.com for the full lineup and more details about places and venues and stages and artists performing.
And you know, Ralph, before we jump into Friday's events, July 19th, I do want to just reiterate some of these things that you're talking about are, again, it's not just an opportunity to be entertained, but it is an opportunity to have a conversation and to learn about different cultures and diversity and so on, again, primarily through music, but also through some, you know, sort of predetermined, you know, events that are going to be focused on very specific topics, but also providing an opportunity like the panel discussion and so on, and then documentaries. So this truly is a multimedia, you know, kind of a weekend, and we just cannot, you know, cannot underestimate the power of that. And when people come in and participate with an open mind and especially an open heart, change happens. You know, this is how we make positive change. So congratulations on making sure that aspect of what this event stands for is truly represented this year.
Absolutely. There are art exhibits, other discussions of different types of music. And like you said, it's educational, it's mind-opening, mind-blowing in many ways. And it complements the musical aspects of the Concert of Colors, all the free music and all of these forums and lectures and art exhibits we're talking about are also free. So you can get the full lineup once again at concertofcolors.com. But yeah, so Friday, July 19th is also a wonderful and busy day with the Charles H. Wright Museum of African American History presenting Reconstruction, a Puerto Rican-based outfit that will get you dancing, as well as a group from Zimbabwe, from Africa, that present Afrofusion and what's being called Zamrock. They are called Mokumba, M-O-K-O-O-M-B-A, Mokumba, and they're going to be taking the stage after Reconstruction at the Charles Wright Museum. And then things that night, Friday, July 19th, will be followed up by Vox Sambu from Haiti, which is a lot of Afrobeat and funk and reggae and a lot of funky rhythms that will definitely get people dancing. So that's a good, fun evening of just getting your dancing shoes, giving them a good workout. The Michigan Science Center will also actually be offering dance lessons on Friday, 11 till 12, with Mambo Marcy doing Latin dance lessons. Arts and Scraps will be there, and the Science Center themselves will be presenting a laser show called Colors of the World. So that's just part of what's happening on Friday. Just more to come.
And that's it. More to come. Even at this point, slots are still being filled, no doubt about it. And I appreciate that on the website, again, which I am still referencing here as I'm talking with you, it's just so easy to navigate, very easy to find, I'm available this date at this time. Let's see what's going on. So nice little cross sections, little charts, and truly, this is very easy. So if you've got some time, we've got stuff to do. Absolutely.
Yeah. And there's more, if I may, there's more on Friday. I should mention that.
Please.
The Detroit Riverfront Conservancy at the DeQuinder Cut is going to be presenting our friends from Trans Global Underground as DJs from that world music collective. They're going to just be doing a DJ set, and they're calling it Trans Global Sound System at the DeQuinder Cut on Friday, July 19th at 7 p.m. Also, the Detroit Historical Society has really been stepping up as a partner for the last few years and really doing a lot with us. And they're going to be doing a few days of great stuff, including a thing that most people, I think, will really enjoy, a tribute to the MC5 after losing Wayne Kramer and then this year Dennis Thompson, the last of the MC5. It's important to celebrate their music. So I'll give you more specifics about that in just a second. But on Friday, the Detroit Historical Society, also known as the Detroit Historical Museum, is presenting the Grande Ballroom documentary called Louder Than Love at 11 a.m. And that's going to be at the Detroit Historical Museum Auditorium on Friday, July 19th at 11 a.m. There'll also be a group called Peanut Butter Mosquito, which is a horn-infused ska, swing, jazz, pop, and feel-good band, abbreviated PBM. They're at 1 o'clock at the Detroit Historical Museum, followed by Dave Sharp World's Quartet featuring Vishnu R. And this is a jazz and Carnatic and Western musical hybrid. There'll also be interviews and performances. There'll be Tales from the D with Don Was, Kick Out the Jams, the MC5, and more at 4:45, featuring Lenny Sinclair, Peter Werby, and Margaret Kramer and Ann DeLisi. And the finale for that night at the Detroit Historical Museum on Friday, July 19th, is something called Motor City Burnin', from John Lee Hooker to the MC5, a legacy tribute band led by Tino Gross, Don Was, and other guest artists, including Johnny B. and Danny Croha. And that is going to be a magnificent celebration of the music of one of the most important bands to come out of Detroit, the MC5. All part of the Concert of Colors for free.
Amazing, amazing. And that's just through Friday. We still have Saturday and Sunday to talk about, which is just, it is bigger and bigger, I'll tell you. And this, you know, the locations will change a little bit based on the days. So day to day, you think, oh, this is where everything is and these three places or whatever. But then on another day, there are different locations introduced and such, which is pretty cool, I think. They're truly something for everyone. So as we remind our listeners, we're talking today with Ralph Valdez. He's the Concert of Colors Deputy Director, celebrating diversity, peace, love, and understanding at this beautiful annual World Music Festival, 33rd year of just really creating opportunities to connect and to grow and to learn from our friends and and those around us that might look, sound, act, believe a little differently than we do, but that's what it's about. And we're happy to support it here on WHFR. We again will be broadcasting for the weekend near the Wolverine stage. So do, when you come out, please stop over to the WHFR tent and say hi to us as well. We're so happy to be a part of this. So we've got Saturday and Sunday still, Ralph, and I'm just blown away with all these names, because again, I recognize some of them, but some just sound so cool. I'm very partial to sort of the Caribbean sound myself for some reason. It just speaks to me, and oh my goodness, that and so much more. So what would you like to share for Saturday?
Yes. Coming up Saturday will be your cup of tea for sure, Susan. We are having a Caribbean costume party and parade that will be starting near the Detroit Institute of Arts and ending up there at the North Lawn. And the details of it can be found at concertofcolors.com, but it's basically going to start with people gathering and feeling invited to wear colorful clothes if they would like, but there will be representatives of the Caribbean community of Detroit and of Michigan in full costume. And they're gathering at the Hannon Center at 4750 Woodward and Hancock at 12 noon and ending up at the North Lawn stage of the Detroit Institute of Arts on Saturday, July 20th, which is going to be a wonderful day for celebration for the Concert of Colors. And there'll be a DJ and then music from Roots Vibration, followed by a lion dance and drum, which is a Chinese cultural costume dance, and then back to the Caribbean music of Universal Expression, and more music and dance from the Lion Dance and Drum Team. And then Ram from Haiti will be taking the stage. They've played the Concert of Colors before, but during COVID, and so it wasn't the joy of seeing them live. And they are an exciting, big, big band in Haiti. And it's Ram, R-A-M, coming to the North Lawn stage of the DIA at 6:30. Then there'll be Etna, another Caribbean artist she's a wonderful musician and vocalist who will be closing things out at the North Lawn stage on Saturday, July 20th. And we've really worked hard to get the Caribbean community involved in helping us to program their portion of the Concert of Colors. And in fact, that's one of our goals, is to do that more and more with each of the various ethnic communities that we have in the Motor City and around Detroit and around Michigan. So we have an organization called the Cultural Exchange Network. And if you have an organization that represents a group of people that maybe doesn't normally get a voice, you can go to Cultural Exchange Network, Google it, and you'll find out more. And we'll be happy to invite you to partake and be part of the this sort of celebration and development of more visibility for these groups that sometimes get overlooked. So we were talking about some of the things that are happening besides music, and I wanted to mention also on Saturday, July 20th, at the University of Michigan Detroit Center on Woodward, right next to the Detroit Symphony Orchestra, the U of M Detroit Center at 1:30 is presenting Palladium Legacies, the Past, Present, and Future of Latin Jazz. It's a panel discussion with a participatory workshop featuring folks that will be playing in the Big Palladium 3, Mario Griot, Tito Rodriguez Jr., and Ozzy Rivera. So that's going to be a lot of fun. It's called Palladium Legacies. It's a panel discussion at 1:30 at the U of M Detroit Center. Also, then the Wolverine stage becomes activated at 1 p.m. on Saturday at the Detroit Institute of Arts in the South Lawn with the Polish Muslims, who have been around for a long time. People, I think listeners will recognize and enjoy seeing the Polish Muslims back in action, followed by Marijuana's World, a Mexican group that I'm looking forward to. And then another group from Southwest Detroit in the Mexican town area called Mariachi Femenil Detroit. It's an all-female mariachi band. So that's going to be a lot of fun at 4 o'clock. And then also at the Wolverine South Lawn stage, 5:30 p.m., Wilson Thicket. And this is an up-and-coming artist that I've been hearing more and more music from and appreciating the roots music, the Appalachian spirit, and the Michigan influences in the music of Wilson Thicket. And that will be closed out by Obie King and the Mudda Funkas, a Detroit funk group, at 7 p.m. So all happening at the Wolverine stage. Meanwhile, the Detroit Institute of Arts North Lawn stage, the Detroit Film Theater stage indoor will feature Makumba, once again, the Zambian Zamrock group, followed by Transglobal Underground at 6 p.m., and then the Big Palladium 3. So all of that happening on Saturday at the Detroit Institute of Arts Detroit Film Theater stage. So there's more to come on Saturday, but I thought I'd better give a break and let
So much to come. Oh, my goodness. And, you know, one of the things as I'm listening to you talking, I've started to make a couple of notes like times and days. And then I'm thinking, well, you know what, I can just go back to the website and figure it out from there. But when the way you're describing things and you the way you pronounce things, I have to say, Ralph, pretty wonderful. That's why I let you do that, because some things I certainly not very good at, but it all sounds truly exciting. And so one of the things that I think we want to recommend as people who have participated in this event for so many years, sometimes it's just fun to just go and not even worry about the schedule, you know, just let me just go. I've got a few hours, you know, I've got the evening, let's just go down there and we can kind of walk around and see what speaks to us. And just kind of connect in that regard as well. If you're not so much of a planner, that works really good, doesn't it?
It does. There's a lot of discovery that can happen. And I've heard from so many friends through the years who just walked in on a performance that they didn't expect, of some music from a part of the world. They had no idea that this type of music was coming from there. And so they became lifelong fans of different groups that they've seen at the Concert of Colors, just, you know, by happy accident. So that happens a lot. And I think that's a great way to just explore and discover. And if you're more of a planner, you can, like we said, go to concertofcolors.com, the website, and there are going to be brochures and posters around town that you can pick up as well with more outlined information. But yeah, we were speaking about Saturday, and there's one more thing on Saturday, July 20th, that I wanted to finish out with before we move into Sunday. The Detroit Historical Museum Auditorium parking lot and loading dock is going to be activated for music and a lowrider show of classic lowrider cars from Southwest Detroit and beyond. Now, they are friends of ours who have presented their magnificent works of art of the car culture in Detroit at both the DIA and the Detroit Historical Museum. This year, it will once again be both, but the show will be at 1 p.m. on Saturday, July 20th, the lowrider show, followed by Nano Two Hype, a DJ deck maestro. And that's followed by Grupo Escobar, which is salsa music. And then Nano 2 Hyper performs again, the DJ, and then closing up the outdoor stage at the Detroit Historical Museum on Saturday is Urban Tropical from Southwest Detroit, a Latin and jazz fusion and dynamic musical experience. So all happening on Saturday, July 20th for the Concert of Colors Free Diversity Festival. Come join us.
Yay, absolutely. And so Sunday, you know, some places, some organizations, some events during their very long week of you know, presenting and showcasing all of this talent, they kind of wind down and they're like, well, Sunday's going to be our sort of our let's just wrap it up kind of a day.
Yeah.
But then
day
it's absolutely not the kid. Absolutely not a day of rest this at Concert of Colors, huh?
Right. Not at Concert of Colors. There's no such thing as rest. It's all just, I mean, there are some relaxing vibes, of course, and some fun, you know, more subdued things, but the general vibe and feel of the festival is just, you know, high energy. And Sunday is another day like that, because we have at the North Lawn stage of the Detroit Institute of Arts at 3 p.m. an Inuit group from Alaska called Pamua. So I'm really looking forward to see what they do and how they present their culture and their music. And that's followed by a K-pop dance-a-thon at 6 p.m. And then once again, the band Transglobal Underground from England, where fusion meets innovation of world music. That'll be taking the outdoor stage at 8:30, the Transglobal Underground on Sunday, July 21st. There's also going to be an event at the Scarab Club that I was mentioning that is an art exhibit of the Art of the Middle East and North African Refugees, a lecture and performance by the curator Biba Sheikh, and the artworks sold and the donations will have proceeds going to the artists, their families, and refugee camp community projects. So this is at the Scarab Club starting at 3 p.m. on Sunday, July 25th. It's an exhibit and a public talk called Mitli Mitlak, which means like me, like you, the art of Middle East and North African refugees. The Scarab Club is at 217 Farnsworth Street, right behind the Detroit Institute of Arts. And then speaking of the Detroit Institute of Arts, there will be performances in the Kresge Court, which is a wonderful setting. I know many of our friends listening have been there. And there's a Odawa activist and multimedia artist named Hadassah Greensky from Detroit, who she'll be performing at 2 p.m. in Kresge Court on Sunday, July 21st at the Detroit Institute of Arts, followed by a name near and dear to me and to many listeners, Reverend Robert Jones, the roots music legacy of Robert Jones. And he'll be joined by another great name and great talent in the folk scene, roots music scene, Matt Watroba. So that's happening at the Kresge Court at the Detroit Institute of Arts at 3:30 p.m. And it's called Echoes of America, the roots music legacy of Robert Jones and Matt Watroba. So come join us there Sunday, July 21st. I have the honor of I'll be introducing Robert Jones that day, so I'll look forward to seeing you there. And then the Detroit Film Theater at the DIA will be having the Chinese-American artist known as Xiaodong Wei. And she has performed a few times for the Concert of Colors and has always just been mind-blowing. Her artistry, her talent, her composing skills. She's even done covers of Sonic Youth songs. So I've seen a little bit of everything from Xiaodong Wei, and it's going to be at the Detroit Film Theater, her band. It's going to be Beijing to Bengaluru, which is China to India, at 2:30 on Sunday, July 21st at the Concert of Colors at the DFT. And then there's something wonderful with Straight Ahead, the all-women jazz group performing with a member of the Last Poets, Umar bin Hassan, who had a famous album called Bebop or Be Dead, and they're going to be reinterpreting that album and performing it together at 5:30. The Detroit Film Theater at the Detroit Institute of Arts is where to check it out. Straight Ahead and Umar bin Hassan. And all that on Sunday is followed by, once again, Don Was and his Detroit All-Star Review with the theme of peace, love, and understanding at 8 p.m. So once again, get there early. And if I may, I'll just close things out with the Wolverine stage starting at 11 a.m. on Sunday. We'll have the ARC Detroit Sunday services, which many folks enjoy. a reflection and worship way to get the day started, followed by the Elevation Youth Corp, and then Chris Canis Band, who he's just one of the best blues players in Detroit right now, but he has a jazz background as well. And that's followed by Jubilee Jackson and then Isis DeMille, who's been getting a lot of attention as well. So all that happening at the Concert of Colors on Sunday, July 21st. And don't forget, you can also see artwork at the Scarab Club starting things off. And you can also see artwork at the Hellenic Center on Kirby, which is an exhibit that will be going through September called Odyssey of Colors. So it's a good fit for the Concert of Colors.
Sounds lovely. Ralph Valdez, wrapping up the amazing lineup, and again, still potentially more things to come, which is hard to believe, but it's a fact. So, as Deputy Director of Concert of Colors, what are a few things that you would want people to know logistically as we focus on this long week, starting the 16th, going through the 21st, through the weekend of July, so right around the corner here, in terms of, you know, speaking to a listener that has never participated in this before. What do we bring? You know, where do we park? What should we plan for? Weather, well, all those kinds of things.
Yes, there are food trucks so people can enjoy different types of food from around the city and around the world. Parking is ample and all around the Midtown area for Wayne State structures. The DIA has a big parking lot. There are lots and structures all around the Midtown area where this is all happening. So you can find parking easily, or you could park further away and take the Q line to get down, you know, which will drop you off right in the heart of things at the Midtown area. And for as far as what you can bring, you can, the outdoor part of the festival, the North Lawn and South Lawn stages of the Detroit Institute of Arts are pretty open to, you know, wanting, encouraging people to treat it almost like a picnic. Bring your own blankets and coolers and such. And even though there will be beverages and food available real close by and arts and scraps for the kids nearby at the Michigan Science Center, you're encouraged to, yeah, just bring a chair, bring a blanket, whatever you like, and enjoy the outdoor festivities as well as the indoor. And usually people are able, like I said, to navigate by walking everywhere in the area. So once you find a good spot for parking, you're free to just enjoy the rest of the festival in a very navigable way by just walking from destination to different venues and all of it very nearby. You know, the stuff that we're presenting, I think, is couldn't happen without the partnerships with all these wonderful Midtown organizations that are, some of them are up and coming, some of them are well established, but we need our friends out there listening to make it complete, you know, to come and enjoy it and spread the word. As we said, go to concertofcolors.com to get the full lineup for this wonderful free festival that we are in our 33rd year of.
We talk about Detroit and its revitalization, what with the opening of, you know, reopening of the, of what we call the Depot, Michigan Central, and so many other things that we can point at. But some of these things, like Concert of Colors, have been going on for many, many, many years. And while they may ebb and flow based on the style or the location of the format, consistently all of these years, Ralph, and you know this better than anybody, great talent, great art, great music, and again, that ability to have diversity and just embracing culture from all over the world, and it's absolutely free, which is the coolest thing. Although I will mention, opportunities to shop, you know, one of my favorite things to do. I often buy a new, you know, sort of like a Caribbean dress every year because I just love them, and that's the best place to get them. So I always bring a little extra money so I can do a little shopping as well.
Yeah, we'll have tents and booths and a little bit of everything and informational tables as well. So I hope our friends listening can come out and support the Concert of Colors. It's easy, it's fun, it's free, and support WHFR, who will be broadcasting live for us from the Concert of Colors on the weekend. And it is July 16th through the 21st. And as Susan so wisely mentioned, the revitalization of so many things happening in Detroit, Concert of Colors has been a part of it for so many years. And if you go to the train station, to the depot, for these free tours and see this marvelous jewel of the city that's been restored, there is a poster room that is just full of Detroit paraphernalia and memorabilia, and there's a Concert of Colors poster there. And it just blew our minds when we saw it. It just touched our hearts. There's a beautiful Gary Grimshaw designed Concert of Colors poster in the new refurbished train depot, Michigan Central train station. So check it out and know that it's all part of what makes Detroit great and what makes the Concert of Colors happen is you and your support.
Absolutely. Concertofcolors.com. Ralph, we're going to leave you with that. Thank you for your time. Thank you for the huge, huge undertaking that you so beautifully execute year after year. And again, we know it takes a team, it takes a village, and lots of people behind the scenes. So we say thank you to every, not only volunteer supporter, but everyone that is doing this as their, again, their vocation and their avocation. That's what this is about. So yeah, we look forward to seeing you down there at Concert of Colors. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you to you, Susan, and everyone at WHFR. We appreciate you very much.
It is our pleasure indeed. This is the WHFR Journal right here on 89.3 FM, WHFR Dearborn.
The best part about HFC is the community. The support that I've received from faculty and students alike has been outrageous. And I feel like that is what's most important, and like that gives us as students confidence to continue.
When COVID hit, I had already been thinking about making a career pivot, and HFC allowed me to come back to college.
If it looks big and scary, just take the step. It's not. Start where you are now and change your stars.
Join us today at hfcc.edu. Henry Ford College. Future driven.
And we hope you're enjoying your 4th of July holiday weekend, which is officially underway. Today being, of course, the 5th of July. Thank you for tuning in to this edition of the Journal. We're going to leave you with a little piece that might make you a little hungry. It is, in fact, just a hair past lunchtime, in fact. Did you know who invented the hamburger? Well, in fact, it's almost impossible to know, given that meat has been consumed all around the world and for centuries. But there is a tracing of sorts back to Tulsa, Oklahoma on July 4th, 1891. Yes, we've missed it by a day and, well, a lot of years, but I think you'll find this show fascinating. This is from Today in History with a group called the Retrospectors, and we'll wrap up this holiday weekend edition of the WHFR Journal. A little food for thought, if you will. Have a great weekend. Stay safe, stay cool, and thank you for tuning in right here to WHFR Dearborn. We are making waves.
It's July 4th, 1891, and another remarkable event is about to be uncovered by Ariel, Rebecca, and Ollie, the Retrospectors.
If you had been a guest at Oscar Bilby's 4th of July party at his ranch just outside Tulsa, Oklahoma on this day, you would have been lucky enough to enjoy delicious Angus beef burgers served on homemade buns. So far, so 4th of July. But what made this occasion special is that this is the first hamburger in history, maybe.
That maybe is doing a lot of work in that sentence.
Yeah.
I am a Bilby partisan, and I will take you all on.
I know it's the 4th of July, and I know you're excited to celebrate the origin of the burger, but yeah, let's just put a heavy disclaimer at the top of this. The legitimacy of this date that we're celebrating all comes down to whether or not you think a hamburger is a hamburger only when it's served on a bun.
The funny thing about it is that it's got this murky and hugely disputed history with American families' rival claims backed by, honestly, everything from like state legislatures' edicts to personal affidavits and massive festivals that get mounted in different cities across the states, which is all particularly funny for a product whose name pays homage to the German city of Hamburg.
I mean, it's probably one of the more contested origin stories. But to be fair, who would have thought of recording the moment they first ate a beef patty inside a bread roll? And as you touched on, Ollie, how do you define the first? Does it have to be a bun? Does it have to be called a hamburger? You know, mushed up meat and bread are food staples in many, if not most, cultures around the world.
Yeah, it's never called that on the menu, though, is it? Not very appetite-whetting.
So meat and bread will obviously have been eaten together in various ways. You only have to look at our meatball episode to know that beef patties are everywhere in all times.
Like, you could say that the groundwork for a hamburger was laid when the first human ate the first cow. And, you know, God knows when that was. Or with the domestication of cattle, see Mesopotamia around 10,000 years ago. But actually, probably at least it's more salient to jump ahead to kind of the 1800s when beef comes to the US with German immigrants.
Yes, because what we do know, regardless of who in America popularized it, the reason that it was in America at all was because German immigrants were in America. Steak Hamburg originated in Hamburg, and it was New York street sellers trying to cater to German sailors, basically, who started selling ground-up mince at some point in the 19th century and created the notion of steak Hamburg as a German-American dish. Mm. As before we get to the hamburger, there's a definite link, isn't there, from Germany to the States that brings us to this point.
Yeah, the connection between the food and the city isn't 100% clear, although it's possible that it arrived in Germany via Russia as a form of steak tartare. And that theory is bolstered by the fact that early hamburger steaks in the US were often served either raw or rare, and they came with a raw egg on top of them, like steak tartare. The first reference in English to Hamburg sausage came in the mid-18th century. By the mid-19th century, there had become hamburger steak, and both recipes are recognisable to us as a basic burger patty with onions and various seasonings. The early one still has that weird medieval thing where they've put like cinnamon and clove and stuff in it, but by the 1800s, we had reached a recognisable modern burger patty.
And by the mid-1800s, then the growth of home grinders that was attributed as being one of the things that was responsible for the spread of hamburgers, because I guess this was the opportunity to take meat home in various different forms and then mush it to your own liking in your own kitchen. But that, in conjunction with this explosion of readily available beef in America, is yet another one of these sort of origin points.
Yes. So from 1871, you could buy Hamburg beefsteak on the breakfast and supper menu of the Clipper restaurant at 311/313 Pacific Street in San Fernando, California. If you did go and you had 10 cents, you could buy a burger, but also mutton chops, pig's feet in batter, stewed veal, pig's head, calf tongue, and stewed kidneys.
I'll take the burger.
Yeah, I'll take the burger. Even if everything else on the menu is like 1p.
Can I take you back to this particular 4th of July in 1891?
You may.
Please.
I'll give you the Bilby version.
Yes.
And for this, we have to thank author Michael Wallace and a 1995 article he wrote about his research into the origins of the burger for Oklahoma Today magazine. So, Oscar Bilby and his wife had been living on their ranch outside of Tulsa for about 7 years when they threw this, their first 4th of July party. Now, according to their grandson, Harold, Oscar himself told him that he had hand-forged his own iron grill, ground his own Angus beef patties, grilled them over hickory wood, while his wife, Fanny, made her secret recipe buns.
Yeah, now, Fanny's buns are an important part of this story because, as I say, we've already got dates that precede this.
If you want to see that original grill, you actually can, because the other thing that Oscar Bilby made was his own root beer. Now, he didn't claim to have invented it. It was first sold 50 years previously, but it was common for farmers to make their own root beer.
And he was the first to put it between buns.
Grandma Funny stuck it right between her buns.
But his root beer was what actually took off rather than the burgers. And there's still a roadside store in Tulsa that sells his root beer and burgers, still operated by the Bilby family. And apparently at this place, which is called Weber's, they claim to still use that original 1891 homemade grill. But I would take it with a grain of salt because they do also claim that Frank and Jesse James were early adopters of their great-grandfather's root beer.
Well, Harold also says, in answer to the question, did he definitely invent the burger? There's not even a trace of doubt in my mind. My grandpa invented the hamburger on a bun right here in what became Oklahoma. And if anybody wants to say different, then let them prove otherwise. And I'm like, you can't just put the onus of proof on someone else.
Especially when, by definition, they would be dead.
Well,
like, long
quite.
Dead yeah. if they had any contrary evidence. So, all right, burger on a bun, maybe, was invented by Oscar Bilby. But burger between two pieces of bread, I mean, i.e. Hamburg steak between two pieces of bread, therefore a burger, there is quite a well-established claim on that from 1885. So 6 years ahead of this, which is 15-year-old as he was then, Charlie Nagreen of Seymour, Wisconsin, who was selling meatballs at the Outagamie County Fair, and people were burning their hands. I don't know why. I mean, I know he was 15 and I know this was 1885 and this was all new, but seriously.
It's coming off a grill, guys.
Yeah. I've got everything. I've got the grill. I've got the meat. Here you are. I mean, yeah, didn't think to have some kind of mechanic that people could walk around the fair eating it on. So people were burning their hands and saying, I don't want your meatball. You're hurting me. And then he went to, in the absence of a Grandma Fanny on site, went to the bakery stall across the way, who were also at the state
also
fair.
Also spluttering because they had nothing inside their bread, nothing.
And said, we've got the perfect combination here, guys. I've got the filling, you've got the bread. And he called this thing the hamburger. He was the first to call it a hamburger. He became known as Hamburger Charlie. He returned to sell hamburgers at the fair every year until his death in 1951. He would apparently entertain the crowds with a guitar and mouth organ, and his jingle, hamburgers, hamburgers, hamburgers hot, onions in the middle, pickle on top, makes your lips go flippity flop.
And not your hands, because we've got
no
bread around it.
Your hands.
Well, the other main claimant to the title of inventor of the hamburger is a guy called Fletcher Davis. He was nicknamed Uncle Dave. He sold hamburger sandwiches, again, between two pieces of bread, mm-hmm. at the 1904 World's Fair in St. Louis,
which, by the way, always was fair.
That's also credited with introducing ice cream cones, hot dogs in buns, and candy floss to the mainstream. But he claimed he'd been selling them in his hometown of Athens, Texas, since the 1880s. And this prompted Oklahoma Governor Frank Keating to get involved. On the 12th of April, 1995, he made an official proclamation declaring Tulsa the real birthplace of the hamburger. And the proclamation opens, whereas scurrilous rumors have credited Athens, Texas as the birthplace of the hamburger, which I think is just such a grandiose opening.
So great.
And he goes on to address this very issue that we have been discussing as well. He says, although someone in Athens in the 1860s may have placed cooked ground beef between two slices of bread, this minor accomplishment can in no way be regarded equal to what comes on a bun, accompanied by such delight as pickles, onions, lettuce, tomato, cheese, and in some cases, special sauce.
And there was a counter proclamation by Wisconsin, whose legislature declared that Seymour, Wisconsin was the home of hamburger, and that's why it's right to hold all the festivals and celebrations in their town.
I mean, the thing that I find most interesting and sort of ironic about all of this is, as we've said, what is sort of beyond doubt is that the origins of it were in Hamburg, Germany. But it had become such an American thing, the hamburger, that by World War II, troops in the States and from the States were given hamburgers on army bases, etc., as their sustenance, because it was an all-American food that they all enjoyed.
Well, they were given hamburgers, but that's probably not the name they're being served under. They were one of the many German food items that underwent a rebranding during World War II. You may have heard of sauerkraut being renamed Liberty Cabbage. Well, much in the same vein, hamburgers were renamed Liberty Steaks.
Which is hilarious, isn't it? And like a predecessor of what happened in our lifetime, which was that short-lived attempt to call French fries freedom fries.
I mean, you had the option to call them beef burgers right there. kids always find it super confusing that, like, a hamburger is not made of ham.
Doesn't have ham in it, yes.
Why not just clear that up from the start?
After contemplating what I really wanted to do in life, Henry Ford seemed like the best option. Knowing that, you know, you're on campus, you go out, you see people, just gives you that sense of community and that sense of you're not alone in this.
I'm a former frontline worker. I wasn't sure what to expect coming back. I wanted a new future. I just went online and I applied. Come back because it's your future.
Join us today at hfcc.edu. Henry Ford College, future driven.